Support for Living on Earth comes from the National Science Foundation and Stonyfield Farm.
From the Jennifer and Ted Stanley Studios in Somerville, Massachusetts, this is Living on Earth. I'm Steve Kerwin. The wind. You can't see it, but you certainly can feel it. From a soft caress on a summer night to a howling hurricane. It goes by many names: Mariah, the Santa Ana, the Hawk. We speak of winds of change, whispered winds of truth, ill winds, and second winds.
Against the wind.
And winds that inspire music.
We were running against the wind.
Everyone knows it's windy.
Like a candle in the wind.
Dust in the wind.
The wind that cries very wild is a wind.
Summer wind, warm summer wind.
Untamed, powerful winds can destroy. Harnessed, they can be put to work. Of the dual nature of wind, Henry David Thoreau wrote, "Do not forget you are completely at the mercy of the wind, and a fickle power it is." Today, the fickle force of the wind can be seen in its power to generate both electricity and controversy. Advocates say modern wind turbines provide unlimited, pollution-free power. But critics complain the huge windmills scar the landscape and pose a menace to wildlife. Today, Catching the Wind. Living on Earth explores the advancements in the technology and the debate over wind power. Our story begins in the nation that leads the world in turning the wind into electric power, Germany. We get our first taste of German wind power on a hill high above the town of Plettwitz, just south of Berlin. On the remains of what was once the largest open-pit coal mine in Europe, 44 modern windmills now stand. Manager Henry Leuvenhardt takes us to the top of one of the giant machines to show how wind power is transforming the German landscape.
And you can notice from up here also the contrast between the destruction of the old energy production of the mines, where the landscape was completely altered and changed, to the new high-tech and alternative source of energy that the wind park provides, which is yet a cleaner and more environmentally friendly and safer.
When it went online in 2001, Plettwitz was the biggest wind park in Europe. Some 10,000 windmills dotted the German countryside then. Today there are 16,000, and there are plans to double that number by the end of the decade, a goal most, but not all, Germans support. In Esch, near Cologne, citizens pack an auditorium to argue the merits of a plan to erect a wind turbine that would rise 643 feet over their village. Many say it's just too big. Others, like Max Bearcolt, say it's just too expensive.
They're saying in this area, in the total year of 360 days, this windmill turns only 70 days. That's the capacity of the wind. So why you need for 70 days production out of a year a big thing which cost us 8.5 million euro? You are lucky to have those things.
The wind turbine plan for Esch was never built. A victory, perhaps, for a small but growing network of wind power opponents in Germany. At a cafe in Berlin, we met this movement's most vocal leader.
My name is Hans Joachim Mengel. I am professor of political science at the Free University of Berlin and living in the region of the Uckermark.
Like many Germans, Herr Mengel favors alternative energy. He's a big advocate of solar, biomass, and conservation as ways to reduce pollution and offset global warming. But he has a litany of reasons why he doesn't support wind power. In the first place, it's unreliable, he says. When there's no wind, you have no energy. And second, he believes government incentives and industry subsidies have led to runaway development of wind parks by investors just out to make a fast buck.
When I saw that the planning process, for example, to set up windmills has really been undercut by financial interests and, in my view, by overwhelming financial interests. And you took not anymore in consideration the protection of the landscape. Then I started to think and afterwards to act.
Hans Mengel took his anti-windmill arguments to the people. He ran for parliament and came in second in regional elections solely on a platform that claimed wind parks are destroying the cultural heritage of Europe.
And I'm not alone with this opinion. One of the foremost playwrights in Europe and Germany and philosopher Bodo Strauss, he mentioned in a new book that by destroying these countrysides, these views, you are destroying the historic feeling of mankind, of European people. And this is a very sad thing.
Critics charge the proliferation of wind turbines is spoiling the German landscape. The idyllic countryside that inspired writers like Goethe and Schiller and composers from Bach to Beethoven. Germans even have a phrase for it, Verspargelung der Landschaft. Roughly translated, it's a complaint that so many wind turbines are sprouting up, the country is turning into an asparagus field. Proponents of wind energy are heeding the criticism. Recently, the German Wind Energy Association agreed to a set of standards for the industry to follow when deciding where to put wind parks. Helmut Ruscheisen is with the Nature Protection Society of Germany, an umbrella organization of environmental groups that helped draft the guidelines.
You know, Germany has a long experience in wind energy. We had made mistakes at the beginning. That means we have chosen the wrong sites for windmills, too near to cities or where people are living, or at the wrong places so that windmills may disturb the landscape, also may be dangerous for birds. And therefore, having made these experiences, we think we should have, if you want to spread the wind energy worldwide and we want to do this, you need a clear standard so that you can develop this without harm for environment or human beings.
To put the anti-wind protest in perspective, it's useful to note that according to polls, two-thirds of all Germans support wind energy. Wind power supporters accuse the coal and nuclear lobbies of fueling the protests. And they dismiss critics as Großstädters, city slickers who don't want to see their views of their country weekend homes spoiled. With Germany committed to phasing out nuclear power and pledged under the Kyoto Accord to reduce greenhouse gases, the German Environment Minister, Jürgen Trittin, says plans to boost wind power will move ahead.
We launched a Renewable Energy Sources Act. It was a decision by Cabinet, and it was a unanimous decision. This has the target to raise the share of electricity in the year 2020 up to 20%.
That's quite a goal, considering Germany now produces just 6% of its energy from wind, and by some accounts is running out of places to site wind parks on land. So in the hope of sticking to its goal, the nation has devised two strategies. First, repowering, that is, replacing aging turbines with more efficient ones. Then, says Peter Amels, president of the German Wind Energy Association, all eyes will turn north to the sea.
The idea is the offshore turbines in 2030 shall produce more electricity, about 15% from the total consumption in Germany.
In the spring of 2004, at a wind park in the North Sea port of Emden, one of the key elements to Germany's offshore energy future was unveiled. Built by Energon, it's called the E-112. At the time, it was the largest wind turbine in the world. From its base to the tip of its rotor blades, it soars more than 600 feet into the air. The blades themselves are longer than the wingspan of a 747. The giant E-112 makes the other windmills here in this park look like play toys.
this single wind machine can supply electricity for 6,000 homes. The E112 size and power are meant to impress not just Germans, but the entire world.
And I want to welcome His Excellency, the Ethiopian Minister of Infrastructure, Dr. Kazu Lala, and from the Republic of Yemen, His Excellency, the Minister for Electricity, Mr. Abdul Rahman Tamun. Thank you all for coming to take part in this ceremony.
But so far, Germany's expansion of wind power to the sea is swamped in bureaucracy and is already behind by 2 years. Industry officials call the approval process for offshore wind parks a nitpicking nightmare that leaves investors nervous. So far, only 8 of 33 proposed offshore projects have gotten the green light. Meanwhile, wind farms are springing up just off the coasts of Britain and especially Denmark, where wind turbines are the third most important part of the manufacturing economy, behind only pharmaceuticals and Legos. Even the man who designed the E112 says the German government's goals are overly ambitious. Energon founder and owner Eloise Vauban says it will take longer than expected because not enough is known about building huge wind parks in deep waters.
So we cannot jump now with a big step in the water and say, now we are ready. This is too risky. And if we fail, we damage the wind energy in Europe. So that is one thing what is not allowed, that we make this kind of mistakes. I know that the conventional utilities waiting for that, that they can say, now once a big company make a mistake, so the wind energy is not reliable. If something goes wrong, they blame me.
Time is running out for Germany. To meet its goals, the nation must reduce its greenhouse gas emissions 40% by 2020. But by then, most of its nuclear plants will be gone, and many conventional generating plants will reach the end of their lifespans, leaving a huge gap in the power production this energy-hungry nation demands, and leaving many Germans wondering if catching the wind can fill the void. Wind power in the United States is growing by leaps and bounds, but not without its own controversies. Wind in the USA is just ahead. Keep listening to Living on Earth.